your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three on this Monday, the weekend recap, and boy, it wasn't that the long time powerhouse ownership group led by Mike Pegram along with partners Watson and Whiteman, not that they weren't going to have big chances into the weekend, but when defunded wins on Saturday, I mean it triggers a situation where they enjoy one of the best, I imagine, one of the best 48-hour periods in the partnership's history. And there's been no shortage of fabulous horses in the familiar McDonald's red and yellow colors. And I just had to reach out for Mike because it's been, frankly, it's been too long. And I think even the last time we spoke, it was more, you know, Southern California racing business than it was, their success. But you know, from the team that produced Midnight Loot and you know, obviously so many others that Midnight Loot's my personal favorite, but. It's always a pleasure, and particularly if we're talking wins like this, to have Mike Pegram join us. Mike, congratulations to you and everybody involved.
Thank you, Steve.
When you had to know things were going to potentially really go your way when defunded won.
Yeah, no, that race set up perfect for him, and he did his job, so... It was nice to get him the win on Saturday because we knew we were sitting pretty good on Sunday.
Talk about this horse too, because not that every male that you campaign has to be a stallion prospect, but this is sort of a I don't want to say second tier, but. And certainly not an afterthought by any means, because he's been campaigned, at a high level. But this was kind of an offbeat result. I mean, it seemed.
Yeah, he just didn't like Del Mar. It was unfortunately he just didn't take, and we were high on him in both races in there, and so he got back to Santa Anita. He loves Santa Anita. His form shows that. And like I said, the race set up perfect for him, and he just went out there and did his thing, and not taking nothing away from him. He ran a tremendous race.
This was a $200,000 Keeneland yearling, and he only started once as a 2-year-old, and then had a nice 3-year-old season, and he was a gelding from early on, though, right? I mean, this wasn't going to be ever really a stallion prospect under your, under your colors.
If I remember right, he was originally, and then when we had to take him to the shelf, we made him a gelding.
Interesting.
And I'm not totally sure on that, but I'm reasonably. But he ran. Baffert don't run a horse in the Santa Anita Derby just for the hell of it. And he ran in the Santa Anita Derby that year, and I know the horse was progressing nicely, and then it was just seemed like everything that happened in our barn then. It was just, for me and my partners, it was a little of this, a little of that, but we always knew he was a nice horse.
Mike, this is interesting because obviously we're going to talk about Cave Rock and we'll talk about, you know, the other the young horses and the fillies, but what is the deciding factor on going on with a horse like this and not, you know, dropping him in for 62.5 or, you know, for some spot and persevering with a horse like this?
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, nobody's got a better judge of horse flesh than Bobby Baffert, and he makes those decisions, and, you know, history has proved him pretty right. You've seen him stick with horses for a long time where other people may have dropped them or gone a lesser route, but, you know, the quality of barn that Bobby has and the master eye that he has of horse flesh, you know, it just gives you an edge as an owner.
I was thinking of maybe asking this question later, but since this came up, how has your approach changed, if it has, you know, in terms of where you buy, your budget, the course of that, the direction you've got? Because you're right now, Mike, you're sitting with a handful of horses in a bunch of different divisions. This may be, is it safe to say that you've got as many top performers at the same time as you've ever had?
Probably so, but, you know, we kind of went through a little lull, and you know this game has its up and down. Things
yep.
happen in streaks, and we went into Del Mar and won more races in Del Mar than we probably had in the last 3 years, and I think we still had the stock, but you just, you know, certain things can happen to you as you go along. Bobby, our buying habits have not changed a bit over the last, since I started with Carl and Paul, and we've been together now since, I think it's Midnight Loot was the first horse we bought
yep.
together, so that would have been 05. So we've been together now for 15, 17 years, and we've spent a little more money now, Steve, because the market has determined that. The sales
yep.
go up, your budget's got to go up. But we bought the same type of horses, and Bobby has been the captain at the wheel, but we haven't changed our approach between the yearlings, the two-year-olds. We got a handful of homebreds, and but this year it's just all came together, and it's kind of like it's our turn.
As some of these programs, and we've talked a lot about this over the summer as the yearling sale season started, and had a conversation, in fact, with Aaron Wellman, that you know, their approach. We've watched here as, you know, and you certainly have a front row seat in the Baffert barn to what SF and Starlight and Matticat, you know, to the Avengers group has done. Then there's Vinny Viola and Mike Rapoli. There's now the Liz Crow and Brad Weisbord Colts group. You know, they're all looking for, you know, for stallions. And one thing about that's happened with you is you guys have not, you know, gone in with other groups. You have not been taken in by this, you know, partnership mania.
No, and we've always done our own thing, and, you know, early on, and, you know, me and Bob goes back to the 80s, and back in when we first started, Bob wasn't comfortable with spending the money that it made to spend to buy the stallion prospects. And our running joke between us is we didn't buy pedigree, we made it.
And we were
lucky enough to do that in some cases. But where we're at now, and it's what Bob has always done, is he's went out and bought the athletes. We may take chances on horses that other people would not, but we're in this business to race. And naturally, we all know the stallions is what keeps this business alive and gives you the bankroll to keep on going. But again, you got to go buy racehorses, and that's what Bobby has done so well for us over the years, and our track record has showed it. And it's and I'd like to take credit for it, but other than writing the checks, he does the heavy lifting.
Well, and of course, you know, some of the stallion produce is only going to just be coming forward, the Hopportunity, for instance, and McKinsey products, and how active on that front? How active? How many Stallion shares do you guys retain?
Well, we retain interest in all of our horses, but as far as going out and buying Stallion shares, we're not in that business. We're in the racing business. So we're, I think we're just the true people that love racing, and the breeding business comes as it is. It's no different if you look at the bloodlines of Midnight Memories. I get a kick out of that because, Bobby trained the Dam, he trained the Sire, he trained the Midnight Loot, he trained the Grand Dam. So it's now, since we've been around so long, that you've came in and seen the pedigree that he has made through his career.
That's a great point. In fact, and Sid probably talked to Sid about this on Wednesday, because, yeah, here's Mastery, Midnight Memories Dam, Tis Midnight, By Midnight Loot. That's a pretty amazing scenario.
Well, let's go one step further. Who's Midnight Loots are? Real quiet.
Yep. Exactly. Where it all started.
That's when we know we're getting old.
Well, and one thing that it's funny, because when it comes to Midnight Loot, and we talk about him with John Sakura, one of the great value sires in the marketplace, and a horse that Baffert always talks about this, that if he didn't have the throat that he had, he would have been a two-turn horse. I mean, people just assume that, sprinter, and he gets sprinters, but that's not that wasn't the case at all. He made the most out of Midnight Loot with what he was dealing with.
Well, it was a masterful training job that he did on him.
That second Breeders' Cup, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, what people, if you go back and look at the lines on him, the only race that he had between Breeders' Cups was the Bing Crosby. And he broke bad and ran horrible. And Bobby trained him into the Breeders' Cup. And then he put on the performance that he did at Santa Anita that day. It was just breathtaking.
Well, and for those that haven't seen the race at, if you haven't seen it in a while, go back and look at the race at Monmouth in the Slop, where it seems impossible from where he is.
I told my grandson at the head of the stretch, I said, we're not going to get a cheat. We're not going to get the cheese, but we're going to get a piece, because he was flying and he caught him by the 16th pole and was handwritten in. It was phenomenal. Still give me chills.
If you've never seen it, folks, depending on how old you are and how long you've followed the game, pull up the 2007 Breeders' Cup sprint. And then stay for Curlin's performance later. Let's talk about the Sunday action, and start with the 2-year-old, because Speed Boat Beach ended up taking everybody by storm, and that includes Gary Young, who who still's not sure what happened to Hijazi Hijazi, I think Gary was blitzkrieged there, but this is an interesting decision what you did, because you got Cave Rock, obviously. We'll get to him in a minute, but Speed Boat Beach, talk about this Byron colt that you tried on the grass, and you punched a ticket to the turf sprint for juveniles.
Right, and again, there is the back in the day when we had the juvenile dirt, and I mean, if there was a dirt race for him, naturally we had never tried the turf, but that was the only logical Breeders' Cup place for him to go. So it was a free shot, and we took it, and it worked, and because he is one fast son of a gun now. And, he came out, and the jock said he didn't know quite what he was, because I think unless he was out in the pasture somewhere, that horse has never seen grass before in his life until Sunday. So he said he was unsure, but once he settled in, the tape shows the rest. He it did not bother him in the least bit, and we bought him down at Ocala, and again, there's another case of Bobby just buying an athlete. Because, you know, that pedigree ain't real, real strong in the book, and that somebody's looking for a sire, they're not going to buy that type of horse. But that's the thing that Bobby knows about our program. We want runners.
There you go. There you go. Well, this is fun, and he reminds, you know, now that you say that, you made me think of something. Didn't Secret Circle try a turf sprint somewhere along the line too? Was that the same kind of a thing?
I don't remember that. I don't think so. He won the 2 year old, the first 2 year old Breeders' Cup dirt race, because I remember when I seen the Breeders' Cup decided to run that race, I said, God, they ought to make us the Bob Baffert, because he was loaded, and little did I know that we had one that was going to win it. But, you know, they're the same type of horse. If you come back, Eddington, you know, Secret Circus are, he was dead at the time we bought him. I think we bought him at Ocala for $100,000. And that shows you about what the market has done in these two-year-old yearling sales. They've about doubled over the last, you know, 10 years.
Hmm.
So, but this is the same type of horse, Secret Circle. And Speedboat Beach would be very comparable.
Well, you know, speaking of Secret Circle, it's just kind of funny. I just had Mark Glatt on, and he won that horse is a Secret Circle, right? Of his.
Yep, absolutely, it is. And he ran a great race that Saturday.
Well, Speedboat Beach, and the public wasn't worried about any pedigree questions, and you know, obviously the fig, it's a modest fig in the 70s, but that doesn't seem to be a concern, and in fact the distance is going to suit at Keeneland as well. So on you go. Before we talk about the other big two-year-old, you already referenced Midnight Memories. And her win in the Zenyatta, very much, you know, in control. Ramon Vasquez, who's been a welcome addition to California, and you know, she, I thought, was handled with real confidence.
Yeah, boy, and that boy can ride, can he?
Uh huh. I like him.
Yeah,
I always liked him.
Yeah, no, he's kind of snuck up on us, but after that race, he just handled her so brilliantly. So, but no, she's a filly that just keeps on getting better. And again, we've given her the time to let her come out and develop, and so on and so forth. She threw a clunker at Del Mar, and horses will do that at Del Mar to you. And she kind of lost it in the paddock that day. But she's growing up to become a real nice filly, and we're going to have a lot of fun with her as we move forward.
This a homebred too, and had Tis Midnight thrown anything up before this?
No, not really. Not really. Nice. They all have one though, Steve. That's what you.
That's
hope
what they say, right?
That one.
Well, to win. I mean, I'm undoubtedly you've won three races over a weekend, but three graded stakes or three speakeasies, not graded, but.
Right.
But it's a win and you're in, so a grade
gives
one,
you
a grade
that,
two.
Gives you that entry money.
Exactly. What's the most similar kind of a weekend that you've had?
Well, you know, we had a hellacious Del Mar. The go down there on closing weekend. As a matter of fact, we've been on an unbelievable roll. You know, Cave Rock won that day. We ran second with having a meltdown, and then really we were disappointed because we thought we had the best horse in the debutante, and actually we got nailed on the wire there. But I've never had a streak like this. You have to go back to Real Quiet and Silver Bullet Day to have a streak like what I've been on. Me and the boys have been on for the last, you know, probably 8 weeks. because I think we've won seven or eight stake races.
Hey, and then there's the horses that broke their maiden over the summer that we'll be watching for. Hard to Figure. You mentioned Cave Rock. I mean, how where does this horse fit at this stage in his career as a 2 year old for you?
Well, I mean, I don't think I've ever had a 2 year old that's this precocious in Silver Bullet Day. I mean, he's just done everything right. Now, what you do remember is there, Baffert's got a shed row of talented horses, so I know we're going to have to put our running shoes on Saturday to win the American Pharoah. But he is, you look at both of his races and the fractions that he set and what he's done. You look at his morning workouts. I mean, this horse just loves to run. And you look at him physically, and you just say, wow. So, and he was a horse that, we spent more money than what we normally spend at the auction, but he was that kind that, those kind cost that much money now.
Well, $550?
Yeah, $550.
As a yearling, and that compared to what we saw at Keeneland last week, that's a bargain.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is, the reason he was a bargain at $550, it was the Arrogate this year looking like that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have touched him. You'd gone into those seven figures for sure. So we had the right timing on him. And again, he's made his daddy look proud. And, we lost a great one when he died so young.
There's no doubt. But there's already a hat full of candidates to help his line continue on, because there was a lot of people really counting on him to. This is something else we've discussed with Sid extensively, which is that it felt like Arrogate was going to be, Unbridled Song's last chance to have, a top producing son. And so now you're going to have to kind of look to, the sons of the son, and who knows, this could be one of them, in Cave Rock. You also have Hard to Figure is waiting in the wings somewhere. What's his status?
Well, now he won the a stake at Los Alves.
Right.
So he came back through that. What Bobby will sit and wait for him on, that's what he's the master of. But he is definitely he's going to be a solid horse if we keep him healthy. And then, like I say, we still have having the Meltdown, who looks like is a one-turn horse, but they can fool you as they grow up. And, he's never done nothing wrong running second to Cave Rock in the Futurity.
That's right.
So right now, and we got a couple others in the barn that still looks like runners. So it's without a doubt the best two-year-old year that I've ever had as far as a crop of horses. And but as I say, I know you walk down that shed row of Baffert's, there's a lot of nice 2 year olds in that barn.
Where do you stand with Fast and Shiny, the Bernardini filly?
Exactly. I think you're gonna see her. I think you're gonna see her and Home Cookie both in the
Chandelier.
In the Cinderella on Saturday.
There you go.
It's been a fun summer, Steve.
Unbelievable. Wow. Mike, I think I've got to ask it because just the atmosphere that has been so contentious. You know him as well as any individual that's had horses with him. How do you view what has transpired and all the difficulties emanating from the Gamine, first the Gamine positive and then the situation with Medina Spirit? How how would you like the rest of the public to look at the situation and you know how can Bob restore people's confidence on a wider basis going forward?
Well, I think people's minds were made up before all of this ever started. I hate to say that, but, you know, through all of this, what he has done for the sport is unbelievable. The track record that he has thrown up at people, you know, the wins that he had, what was the awesome again, the eighth time. And I can remember, and I've done business, so I'm the wrong guy to talk to because me and Bob been together since 1985. We've done business with him. So I'm the wrong guy to ask because my opinion is formed because I've sat and watched the man do what he's done. And with the character that he's done, I know how much he loves his sport. So you got the test or what they are. And, you know, that's for the courts to sort out. But I'm just telling you, as a human being, there isn't a better person in horse racing than Bob Baffert. And I know I would get egged and stoned if I said that in front of a certain group, but so be it. That's America. And he's my friend, and I'll run the rapids with him anywhere.
I appreciate it, Mike. Let me also ask and take the opportunity because, you know, the last time I mentioned to people that with your visit today, the last time we spoke, it was when you were trying to help the racing community find a way forward with Hollywood's closure. And we haven't talked about this topic since then. Some thoughts about you know, where things are in Southern California racing and you know, what your thoughts have been, you know, since really from you was a generous offer to, you know, to try to have an alternate, you know, an alternate site and a full-fledged, you know, third venue in Southern California. Some thoughts on this topic.
Well, the thing that California needs more than anything else is a training center. You know, if you want horse racing to continue, you can't run horses on $3 million an acre land and stable horses there. The economics don't work. Any businessman will tell you that, Steve. So Santa Anita isn't going to be there forever. I hope it's going to be there forever. But again, to sit there with that kind of money when you're sitting on land like that is... I hope it never happens, but California has got to get to the place where they got an off track stabling and hopefully the horsemen can control that situation. You know, we worked hard TOC to do it. Los Alamitos and Doc Allred was our savior to come in with the stabling that they have there. But, you know, Doc is getting up in years, and he's always said when he's gone, Los Alamitos will be gone. So, again, California's got a lot of issues in there. I'm proud what Santa Anita has done and how the horsemen have stuck together and kept California going. But there's just got to be a long-term plan. And right now, I know they're working on it. I know Gary Fenton and the TOC is very aware of it, and I just hope to get it done.
How active a role do you are you playing these days on this topic? I have not seen, you know, I haven't seen quotes from you recently. I mean, there was a point where you were volunteering your time, your savvy and your money, and it seemed like nobody wanted to take you up on the offer.
No, we made a lot of progress. You know, I sat as chairman for 6 years and stepped down, and Nick Alexander took the ball, and they did a lot of good things with that. Gary Fenton from Little Red Feather is now running it, and Gary is a good man. But again, it's going to just take everybody to get together and look at this and say, what's this sport going to look like in 10 years? And right now, it's a very murky picture in California.
Well, it's a bright picture for Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman. And what goes on the oval, that should always be the priority, right?
Well, absolutely. And let me say one other thing, though. If I didn't think they would figure it out, I wouldn't be at the yearling sales and the two-year-old sales still buying. So I'm an optimist. I know they're smart enough to figure it out. There's an answer here, and we'll get there.
Well, and that's encouraging. And it's one of the, you know, it's nice to hear you say that too, Mike, because I very frequently rely on that kind of an approach or mentality, which is there's too many successful, bright people involved for the game to fail and for the game to falter. There's too many successful people that are smart and are dedicated to its survival and to, you know, making it as good as it can be. I mean, no one's expecting everybody to agree on every topic, but that's a very encouraging and upbeat message from you.
Like I say, we got the greatest sport in the world, and I just hope it can continue on. And you look at the sales arena and so on, there's still a hell of a lot of positive signs for us. So I'm not ready to throw in the towel.
No, what's the saying? Nobody walked away with a good two-year-old. Nobody walked away with six good two-year-olds or eight good two-year-olds, which is what's going on. Plus a four-year-old gelding and a four-year-old filly and so much more. Mike, thanks so much for this. And obviously we'll see you at Breeders' Cup. And looks like just a banner year for the partnership. Pegram, Watson, Whiteman, the very familiar jacket that has produced, I don't know, three dozen graded stake winners. How many grade ones?
Oh, God. I'm too lucky to count them.
That's a
too
great
lucky
quote.
To count them. There's a bunch of them. I can tell you that. There's a bunch of them.
I love it. Michael, thanks so much for this. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you taking your time. Thank you.
Mike Pegram, everybody. There you go. Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman. And what a banner. It is funny because there was a little bit of a quiet after McKinsey and Hoppy. There was a little bit of a lull. He's right. I hadn't really thought about it. But, you know, just because they're such a, you know, familiar entity around the game. But, boy, back with a vengeance. And there's 22 for 57 for the year. 22 wins and 57 starts. It's not the best. Not the best year that doesn't. Well, I guess if they win a Breeders' Cup race or two, maybe. But there's also a couple of configuration issues because of the way in which I think there was one of the names. I think either Watson or Whiteman had another name or something attached to it. So not all of their winners and not all of their seasons are easily quantified on Equibase. But the current configuration shows, 2007 to 2022. But like, for instance, there it is, Midnight Loot, Watson, Whiteman Performances LLC. That was the tweaky name, and Pegram. So that was a different entity entirely. So Midnight Loot's career is not lumped in you know, which was 2007 and, you know, 6, 7, 8 in that range, isn't tied in. So, all right, Case, let's get Johnny in here. And certainly Johnny, plenty of, yeah, no, and thanks, John. John Lindo just sent me a note. The Three Amigos is their, is how they sign their, they sign their tickets. You know, that you would, I'm sure that they've been approached. I should have asked Mike that. I'm sure that they've been approached by other, you know, groups. Like, you know, I'm sure if we asked Aaron Wellman, you know, sometimes it, you know, sometimes we've seen, and we've seen it a lot the last few years, the way in which, you know, group, you know, there's plenty of people like, and of course, I guess they're a group to begin with, right? If there's three of them together, but that's not quite the same as, and they've been, and given the time that they've been doing it as partners, and that, you know, that's as long a run, and obviously they're still having plenty of fun. I mean, but that's as long a run as I think you'll see. But Johnny's here, and Johnny, you witnessed a lot of the Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman success. You had a front row seat.
Absolutely, and you know, I assumed Mike would be a great guest because he's basically, the best way to say it is, he's Mike. You know, he's pretty straightforward. He's a, you know, from the days long ago when he'd be leaning up against the fence at Del Mar with a cooler full of, I think it was Coors Light. I think it was Coors Light on ice. And if you stopped by to chat with him, you certainly would have a beer in your hand. And, you know, just, he's Mike. And he's always been Mike. And if you didn't know about his success, you'd be shocked by it because, you know, he was just a regular guy, liked to play the races, loved hanging out at the track, having a good time. Not a turf club owner, more of a, you know, hanging the paddock with a Hawaiian shirt on there. So Mike's always been Mike.
They and their run of success. I mean, I focused on Midnight Loot, and I didn't realize that Midnight Loot was actually the kickoff horse for them. But to just give everybody an idea, looking at Lucky, of course, sort of kick things into high gear. Ventana, the nice sprinting filly, Coil. Indian Firewater, forgot about him. Drill, really Mr. Greeley, who was a good two-year-old. Executive Privilege, the filly. Secret Circle, 50 Shades of Hay. Midnight Lucky, we mentioned Secret Circle. Tis Midnight, Opportunity, Tays on Ice, Gimme the Loot, Pretty and Cool, Opportunity, Give Me the Loot, bup, 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 bup. McKinsey, who was one of my favorites and my Derby choice. McKinsey. Uncle Chuck. I forgot about Uncle Chuck. Was a member. Uncle Chuck was going to be the next great thing. Azul Coast, Midnight Memories now, Having a Meltdown, Cave Rock, Defunded on Saturday. Also Essential Wager, that sprinter, and Speed Boat Beach, and then there was another, what, three two-year-olds that haven't won stakes yet, but they've already won maiden races or hit the board in stakes. Just a consistent run of success.
Yeah, consistent run of success, and, you know, going back to the beginning and moving forward, it's been, as you said, a consistent run of success. And not at crazy prices.
Right.
I mean, they've spent good money to buy these horses. And as Mike mentioned, you know, the prices have gone up. in the last few years. But, you know, to anyone who follows the game, as you kind of tried to say, $500,000 for, you know, a good horse is not crazy money in this market. It's not at all.
Yeah.
It's very reasonable money, actually.
And yeah, it's serious. It's serious money, but it's not. But
yeah,
it's not
ridiculous. Definitely. And as you look back in their history, I couldn't give you exact numbers, or I couldn't give you exact names. I just know this to be true: that they have not spent. You know, they haven't spent like $1 million for a horse, or you know, done some crazy numbers. I mean, they've gotten grade one stakes winners for, I'm going to say, in the 200 range.
Right.
You know, or less.
Well, I'll give you an example. Here's Silver Bullet Day. Now, this is interesting. They paid $155,000 for Silver Bullet Day in 1997. I'd be curious what $155,000 is in yearling dollars today, because that was a square price, $155,000 in 1997.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think that's what we can say, is that square price is what they. And look, Mike said it. It's, you know, it's back with his eye. I mean, look, put aside what you think of Bob Baffert, right, wrong, and different. Put all that aside. It's kind of like, look, if you want to look at somebody like Pete Rose, put aside everything for a minute. Forget he bet on baseball. Forget he's Pete Rose. Forget everything. Put it all aside. Just look at what he did on the field for a moment. Look at what he did on the field, how, you know, his accomplishments. And, you know, when you look at Bob Baffert, you put all that aside for a minute, right, wrong, and different. I'm not judging it at all. Put it all aside. The man knows horses. And you don't, you say, well, he spends more money than any. Okay, yes, he has huge clients. He didn't always have huge clients. And Pegram was with him from the beginning. And the success they had by, what did they buy, what did they buy the fish for?
Real quiet. He was, yeah, he was next to nothing. He was cheap.
I mean,
he was 37,000, I want to say. I'm going to, hold on, let me look it up. Now you got me.
Yeah.
Now you got me. I want to say 37 sticks in my head.
And whatever.
No. Woof. 17. Okay. 17,000.
The fish. Yeah, it was fun. It was, I mean, you know, look, they don't, that doesn't happen very often, granted. But it happened, and Pegram and Baffert have been a team for a long time. Like Mike explained it, they're friends. I think when Bob came over from the quarter horse side of things, I have to say that Mike, and I don't know if Watson and Whiteman were with him together. They may have been. I think they were. Anyway, it's close. The timing's close, I think. But I know Pegram was there and from the beginning. And, you know, they've been a great team and done exceedingly well. So you say, well, Baxter buys the most expensive horses. He should get, yes, he does. And, yes, he does get the mileage out of them. He spends, and he has success. But he also works at another level, and he also has unbelievable success at that level, too. So, you know, it's because whatever your opinion is, you know, the man knows horses, knows how to train, knows how to pick out a horse, knows what an athlete looks like. Yeah. It's like a guy putting together, you know, your draft choices. Okay, he gets the draft 12 times in the first round. Okay, so it's a little, you know, okay. But he also picks up horses players in the fourth or fifth round that become all pro. So that, whatever your opinion is, fine. you're entitled to it. You know, as Mike said, everyone's opinion, they're entitled to it. But you can't ever say the guy doesn't know what a good horse looks like and that he can't train a horse. Those are two things you can't say.
Well, and, you know, for those, there's actually, you heard me sort of reference the colors, the yellow and red. For those that don't, you know, that haven't seen any Mike Pegram backstory, McDonald's franchisee, and those silks are, you know, McDonald's colors for a reason, and he grew up in Indiana and going to places like Ellis and Churchill and wanted, you know, wanted to get in racing and wanted a Derby winner. And it's funny that, you know, he got one relatively quickly, compared to some of the people that, you know, that have that dream. You know, something, think about a Paul Mellon type that didn't get one until Sierra late. It's a funny, it's a very fickle, the Derby gods, as they say, it's very fickle, but he had success early, you know, in Silver Bullet Day, as big as Real Quiet, you know, winning a Derby was, if you're not of a certain age, you cannot believe how big a star Silver Bullet Day was.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it just seemed like every year. They would have a top horse, a breeder. I would like to see how many Pegrams run in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, we could probably look that pretty easily in all the Breeders' Cup races, and then you'd go year by year, and, you know, more often than not, they'd have a horse in the Breeders' Cup. And how many people are trying to make that happen? And they made it happen pretty regularly. It's just an amazing combination, you know. And they're friends. Still, imagine that.
Yeah, exactly, you know, right?
some people want to kill their trainer.
Well, and here's an answer, pretty rattled, pretty quickly. They've got, as Watson, Pegram and Whiteman, they've had 13 starters. With 2 wins, 4 seconds, and 2 fourths, $3.7
million. Yeah, well, there you go. Pretty wild. Pretty wild.
And I'm sure, actually, that's probably partial because it's so, you know, tricky pulling up these kinds of stats without doing multiple searches. That's just off the, you know, off the all-time list. And now I can't even, for some reason, I can't seem to put in the name. All right. Well, this is something for after the show.
The point is well made.
Yes, exactly.
They've been great together. And they haven't spent a bunch of money. They spent good money, but not crazy money.
There you go. Well, and Johnny, we only have about 10 minutes. I'm trying to think let me get back on track. We got another weekend, and it does feel when looking ahead, Keeneland opening this week and what they're going to throw at us over the Fall Stars weekend, with all the hubbub on Flightline, that seems well established now, and we know what those storylines are going to look like going in, and it's sort of the time to kind of, you know, begin to sift and get a feel for how these fields shape up.
Yeah, I think it's a little early for you know, getting. You're right; they're going to start to take shape. But I try and avoid looking at things this early because I don't want to form opinions. You know, it's best to just, for me, it's best to wait and let's just get through it. And once you get to where the nominations are, you kind of see who's looking at what races. I think at that point you can start to think about things a little more. You know, racing, the sad thing is that you can lose a horse overnight, and we all know that. We've seen it happen, and you hope it doesn't, but it's a part of the game. So it's best not to get too wound up, I don't think, at this point. Let's see what happens at Keeneland. Let's move forward and just take our time. You know, I mean, we have some idea of things, but I'm not ready to start to, you know, look too specifically. I don't want to form opinions. We've all formed the opinion that Flightline is a free spot on the bingo card, but you know, let's slow down here a minute.
Well, and that's going to be hard. You're right, and that's going to be hard. You know what else? It's also going to be hard, Johnny. There's something we can equate here. It's going to be hard to move off that impression of Flightline heading toward Classic, and it's going to be hard, you know, not to envision the birds in the Super Bowl. I can't see any other result now. We're 17-0. I can't wait to stop those old Miami Dolphins from their annual nonsense.
You went from they've already stopped that, so that's good. But you already jumped from now to November, the first weekend of November. You just skipped the month of October right away, and then you went to February. You just passed a bunch of months. I certainly understand the excitement. I have some in myself for sure of this team. The offense, which I said in the beginning of the year, is going to be very difficult to defend because they have so many weapons. The quarterback, Jalen Hurts, has improved. He's distributing the ball to these great wide receivers. The tight end's a good receiver. Running back can catch. Running back can run. They can run the ball. Jalen Hurts, if you stop all those receivers, Jalen Hurts will tuck it under his arm and run for 15 yards. I mean, that offense is a really good offense. The defense, I'm not sold on yet, particularly the pass defense. I have to see a little more because the schedule has been very good to us so far. I'm part of the team. Schedule's been very good to Philadelphia so far. We have not faced a top-notch squad, and it hit me in the face last night watching Kansas City and Tampa Bay. And Kansas City, what a top-notch team they are. Buffalo, good team. I watch these teams move. I watched those two quarterbacks, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and I think to myself, wow, that's the level we want to get to. I don't know if we're there yet, but I might add, those are both AFC teams. So
exactly. Only one of them can go forward, right?
Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe I think this, and I thought this at the beginning of the year. I thought the Eagles would probably win the division. So I bet them to win the division. And then I said,
what'd you get for not?
Oh, heck if I remember. It wasn't a lot. Maybe 2.5-1, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe 2-1, something like that. So I bet it up there. So I said, I think that's going to happen. But I took part of my winnings, because I'm pretty sure about that happening, and I bet them to win the conference and to win the Super Bowl. So I took a flyer on them. I took two flyers on them, actually. But when I looked at the NFC, I said, you know what? You know, if they have a really good record and they get home field advantage, which they could, they really could at this point. It's possible. They might make it. They might make it. So, anyway, It's not like I didn't see it coming. I thought they'd have a good. I looked at their early schedule. I thought it could be 5-6-0 before the dust settles, and from there it's not hard to get to 10 or 11, and that's going to win the division. So, anyway, that's where my money's at. My heart is there, but also as a better, as a football handicapper, as a football better, I know they haven't faced anybody yet. I know, I understand that, but they look good. They look strong. I'm not going to go over, not going to get over my skis here. I'm going to stay. I'm going to stay in control. But they look good.
All right. It's fun. It would so, you know, as you and I talked famously through the 2017 season, it was, or at least, well, wait a minute. I never gave up. You had already jumped off the ship. You sprained your ankle.
I want to be real. I try and make it real. And if you're going to make, if you're going to make it real, yesterday they beat the Jaguars, who all improved, are not a top team. They're not a good team. They beat the Jaguars. Great. The Jaguars had 4 lost fumbles in the game. They beat the Jaguars by 8 points. 4 lost fumbles in a game, you should be destroyed if you lose 4 fumbles in a game. So,
Nasty day.
But you lose 4, you know, you lose 4 fumbles, that should turn into points. Anyway, bottom line, they won the game. They advanced. They moved one step further. I also know that there's a theory that when one team is undefeated, you're supposed to, after like the, you know, the 4th week of the season, you're supposed to start betting against them because
no doubt,
but not gonna last.
No, well, they're going to be favored though. Apparently, in every game, at least as of now, they look to be favorites the rest of the way. Johnny, I got to pull up. It's been such a crazy fun morning. Thank you.
Yeah. Stevie, have a good day.
Johnny D, everybody. XB, Johnny D. And thanks to Johnny, Mike Pegram, Mig, and Mark Glatt. And we still got to make up with Doug O'Neill and tomorrow as well. And Todd Pletcher, Andy Serling, much, much more. Good luck if you're playing today. The end of the match series today. Maybe we'll get Alan to wrap it up tomorrow. Alan Foreman. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect...